Communicating in the workplace is hard. Communication through conflict is hard. Starting a conversation that might be a little bit uncomfortable is hard. All of those things, so hard. And as any working adult knows, you may not always get along with your coworkers or your peers in the workplace. Guys, don't worry. I have Deborah Roberts on the show today, and I've had her on before. She is a communication expert, and she is going to navigate us through any and all of those issues that we might be facing in the workplace regarding communication. This specific episode is so touching and such an honor for me because it's a little bit therapeutic as I get ready to take on my next challenge and my next role in the Navy. She discusses one-on-one with me some fears I might have, some insecurities that I have before I report to my next command, and walks me through some of those challenges that I face myself. Deborah is an author, a conversation expert, a public speaker, and developer of the Relationship Protocol Communication Model. Her practical and effective approach to communication transforms how we interact and work together. It is at the core of the Communication Protocol, an 8-lesson online professional development program, that Deborah is developing a new online program for personal relationships as well. She has a background as a licensed clinical social worker, a business consultant, a trauma consultant, and has over 25 years of experience working with challenging relationships in all settings. It's such an honor to have her because she's so relatable. She's so clearly easy to speak with, but she also gives us practical tips to approach these very difficult communication problems we may be having. So let's dive in. Here's Deborah Roberts. You're listening to Misunderstood Podcast, where we are setting the record straight on all things misunderstood. I'm your host, Kelly Hall Sabraki, pageant runner-up, model, speaker, wife, and U.S. Navy lieutenant. I may have never won a Miss USA title, but I am the queen of being misunderstood. Welcome to the show, guys. What's up, world? Welcome back to another episode of Misunderstood Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Sabraki, and thrilled to have returning guest, Deborah Roberts, who is a professional in communication. She developed the Relationship Protocol Communication and is an absolute expert. Thank you so much for being here, Deborah. I'm so thrilled. It's going to be like therapy for me.
I don't think so, but it will be fun.
So Deborah, last time we spoke so much about foundational tools for communication, and you really have crafted this protocol to help people like me, younger and older, really understand basics as to how to perfect communication with others. But specifically what I want to talk to you about today is communication in the workplace. Tell us, like, why is communication in the workplace different than pretty much any other relationship?
You know, what's interesting about that is when I developed the Relationship Protocol Communication Model, it came out of my work with more interpersonal relationships, but also in business as well. And when I developed my online course for the workplace, I started to realize that the workplace is different. We communicate a little bit differently. It's honestly a little more superficial. Even though we are supposed to be real and authentic, it's not as deep, it's not as emotional, it's interpersonal in terms of how we communicate. There's a more formal way of doing things in some ways. And we don't have to go as deep. We can address something and move on. We don't have to explore it and understand it because we show up, we do what we need to do. Some relationships go deeper. But the trust building, the basic concepts are the same, but how they play out are a little bit different in the workplace.
I completely understand what you're saying already. When you say superficial, I have said this phrase, unfortunately, like 4 times in the last week. You're going to kill me. I've said, I just need to play the game. I've said that phrase several times and my peers are like, what? But sometimes I truly feel like I need to act a certain way because I want to be real. I want to be authentic. I want to speak my mind. But then I also know that there are more senior, in my experience, military, senior ranking officers that maybe they're not just quite ready for that. They're not ready for real, authentic, outspoken Kelly. They need just Lieutenant Kelly Hall Sabraki, who's, you know, going to obey the orders and say, yes, sir, and do what I'm told. And so I have to, quote, play the game. And it can be so frustrating because I just want to be outspoken and say, you know, my piece, as you know, following me on social media, I'm very outspoken. I'm very mission oriented. So help me. Am I doing this correctly? Like, how do I speak to peers? How do I speak to bosses or more senior people? Do I go about that differently?
Well, I think you're doing it right, actually.
Thanks, Deborah.
Anytime.
I need you to cheer me on a little bit.
It's very hard when you want to say what's on your mind and express yourself openly, but you know that it won't be received well. And that can happen in a personal relationships too. But what you're saying is, I know that my superiors would not appreciate it. It wouldn't be welcomed. And we have to know that as well. I call it knowing who's on the other side of the interaction. So you know that the person who's on the receiving end, they're not going to accept me to go in and just, hey, how you doing? I don't know if that's more what you're referring to, but...
Nope, that's me. That's definitely me.
So, but in that setting, we have to adapt. We have to be able to modify. It doesn't mean we're being inauthentic. It doesn't mean we don't care. It doesn't mean we're not committed or we're even being phony, as much as in any relationship, anytime you're communicating with someone, it's not just about you. It's about the environment and the person that you're speaking to. I was once, I don't get my nails done often, but I was in a nail salon and there was a woman near me who was talking about her husband to her friend. And not saying nice things, and loudly. Now, if you want to talk about such a private conversation in a public setting, that to me didn't feel appropriate. I felt like I was had my nose to the ground or something, listening to something that I shouldn't hear, my ear to the ground, I should say. And I think she wasn't paying attention to the environment that she was in, and I felt it was out of turn. Whereas what you're saying is, in my work environment, I know that there's a protocol there and I follow it because I'm respectful of the protocol. That's all it is, and plain and simple, versus in other settings, you're more outspoken, or with peers, you might be a little bit, you are, I'm sure, more open and curious and able to ask questions that you might not ask of a superior officer.
So have you heard the term, I'm sure, flipping a switch, flip the switch.
In reference to?
So in the military, I've heard this since I was at the Naval Academy, know, quote, when to flip the switch. So in this case, I'm typically always very like charismatic, giddy, fun, pretty goofy person, even at the workplace when I'm with peers. But then I know in, like you said, those settings that I have to flip the switch. I'm a little bit more buttoned up. I understand who's on the receiving end. I know I can still be myself, but kind of with some limitations because I can't always be goofy, bubbly, you know, charismatic Kelly. Like there needs to be a time and a place. So we always say like know when to flip the switch. That's what it kind of feels like you're saying, like you said, assessing who's receiving you in a workplace environment.
That's right. And assessing the environment. The nail salon example was just to give an example of that was a forum where I should not have heard that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was disrespectful to her husband. And it was, and that's just my take on that. But I think what we're saying is in different environments, we need to assess and determine how comfortable we are, how open we want to be, and how we want to show up. But it's a decision. That's really the key. That's where self-awareness comes in, knowing yourself enough that you're present and you make a decision about how you want to show up in the work environment as a team member, as the leader of the team, in your home, whatever it is, so that there's a conscious process that's going on. You feel your feet on the floor and you move forward in a way that's comfortable for you, but also appropriate to the setting so that you can get the most out of it that you need to get as well. This isn't just for them. It benefits you when you're more thoughtful about how you show up.
So I'm writing this note down. I feel like what you're saying is before you even show up into the workplace, the decision is ultimately up to you how you want to be perceived in the workplace. And that's done through really how you communicate and how you portray yourself. Is that correct?
It is correct. We only can control ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I can't control how anyone perceives me, but I can try to understand the environment I'm in, and I can make a decision about how I want to show up. Again, authentically, but it might mean that I might go in and I know I want to fix something. I know I can, but everybody in the same room with me also feels the same way. So we all have to be open to listening to each other rather than stepping up and saying, no, I know the solution. We want to be respectful that they're not looking less necessarily to me to be the fixer of a problem as much as we're looking for a collaboration. So know the environment you're stepping into and assess it that way. And yes, think ahead. And I think in general, just being thoughtful about who we are in the world and how we, you know, for what we can control, want to have others think about us and how we want to make them feel also when they're around us. That's a consideration as well.
So as someone, I am about to check into a new command and start a completely different role. And I'm in a unique position because I do very publicly share my life, my thoughts, you know, interactions on social media. So I'm in a unique position. But what advice would you give to me or to peers who are starting something new and want to make a good impression in the workplace?
Well, first of all, this isn't your first rodeo, as they say. You've been in the military. You're very familiar with it. So I think you go in a little bit more confidently than someone who is entering an environment that they've never been in before.
Okay.
Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's fair. Mm-hmm.
You're not going in completely unsure and uncertain of what to expect. But I think that when we walk into an environment and we make eye contact with people, if it's face-to-face and you're able to do that in person, I think that's very important to smile and be friendly and be open to learning, be curious, but also show up. Let the person know by your actions and your words that you're committed to doing the best that you can, that you're looking to be a part of the team, and that you're excited to be there.
I like that. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever received was show up. Show up. And I think that so much of that first impression can be made, not just within like the first, first impression within the first 24 hours is definitely important. That initial handshake, that initial meet. But I really would say like a first 120 days. That's a long time. But people, I feel like this is my fifth command. How long have I been in the Navy? 9 years now? Like, what's happening? So 9 years into it and multiple commands later, people really like observe you for a while, not just the first week. They want to see, are you going to walk the walk, talk the talk? Like
consistency.
Exactly. So I say almost that first impression kind of lasts till almost 120 days, maybe 3 months, but I try to extend it so that way they really get to know me and they realize like I'm very valid in what I'm saying and true to my beliefs. And I'm really there to try to make an impact. So it's kind of like a long first impression, but I love everything that you're saying because I try to instill that in what I'm doing now. But I'm going to take that a bit further in a position of leadership. For example, I'm going into a much higher position than I have previously in this new command. If you're about to work with subordinates, is there a different way to communicate with subordinates? You know, how to establish yourself as that leader or that boss early on?
Well, first of all, I want to go back to what you said also about the 120 days before I answer the leadership question. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Dissect me. Like I said, this is like therapy for me. Dissect it. Give me all the tips.
It's not a dissection as much as a validation. What's happening is consistency is how we build trust. So if over time your words match your actions, you can go in and say, I'm the most reliable person that you'll ever find in this department. And then you don't show up in a reliable manner. Mm-hmm. That's part of how people see that you're not committed. It's how trust gets broken. So how trust gets built is by every experience that they have with you. Every experience they have with you goes into the bucket of trust.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's what you're saying, that they want to see that I'm reliable, that what I say I can do, and that I will show up authentically. And so at 120 days in, they really have a good sense of who I am. So I'm rubber stamping everything you said.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Again, that gives me a nudge in the right direction when I'm moving forward. Like, okay, maybe I do have the right tools to succeed in this new season of my life. So thank you. But like I said, I've never really been in a position where I've shown up as a boss before. So I don't know, do I treat it, you know, I always want to be friends with everyone, but I can't be friends with everyone because I'm their boss. Is there a difference in the way that I communicate as a leader?
Does it feel different to you going in?
Yes, it feels very different.
Okay, so what feels different?
So typically in the military, you know, you have division officers, there's a lot of you, and then you report to another more senior person, and they report to another more senior person, they report, so there's a chain, there's that chain of command. And I'm typically on the lower end of that, being more junior. Well, like I said, fast forward 9 years, here we are, I'm moving up the chain. I'm kind of terrified, but I'm moving up. And now I'll be second in command. So I'll have a boss, but as the executive officer, I'm second in charge. And so I have a lot more people who are subordinate to me than I'm used to. And I do want to, you know, I want to listen. I want to be the kind of person that they can come talk to. And I have that open door policy, but I also don't want to establish myself as a friend. I want them to take me seriously as their boss and as that leader. And I'm not sure if I should change any sort of my communication style while in the workplace.
Did you have a leader that you admired who you felt knew how to draw that line?
Yes.
So what was it about that leader that you knew was something that you would like to model?
Well, she was very inclusive and open-minded.
Okay.
And she cared. So she always took time to care about everyone who worked for her. But she was so much smarter than me. She's so much smarter than me. And so I look at that and I think, okay, I want to be very inclusive. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure everyone feels comfortable speaking up in situations, that their voice can be heard. Incredibly humble. You know, obviously a lot of these subordinates I'm going to be in charge of have been in this industry for a lot longer than me. That's the unique part about the military, is you move up in rank, but sometimes you have people who are working for you that have been in the military 3 times longer than you.
Okay.
You just outrank them. So I love that. But I think, you know, Deborah, one of the things that you mentioned before we hop on the call is that you can feel my passion and, you know, my charisma and my excitement through my social media, for example. That's how I am. And I worry sometimes that that energy and charisma and gregariousness can be misperceived as unprofessionalism. And I don't want to be unprofessional. I want to make sure that I'm professional, but still authentic to myself.
I think that I have no concerns about you.
Thank you. That means a lot. I have concerns about me. So thank you for rubber stamping that again.
Well, because if you think of everything you've said, even here tonight, you've said that you knew that when you were with your superior officers, that how you treated them and how you responded was different. I think you're very present when you're in uniform or when you're in your position.
Mm-hmm.
And so you make decisions based on that. And I think you have to trust your instinct that you've been around the military, I believe, your whole life for the most part.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So just having that experience in your DNA, I think that you're very clear about where a line is being drawn of when someone is being unprofessional or inappropriate, and demonstrating the kindness and being a role model, but also creating that line of we're not friends, I think will come just by your actions of giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're trying their best, that mm-hmm. they are showing up in the best way that they know how. However, this is a concern for me. So I think when you do eventually have to, should you have to approach someone, that's the best way to do it. I know you're trying. I commend you for trying. Here's my concern.
I like that. I know you're trying. I commend you for trying. Here's my concern. I think, you know, that's a great tangible piece of advice moving forward for people pretty much in any capacity, but especially those in my age group who, you know, I'm 30, almost 31 years old, but being a boss, stepping into a leadership role, it gets harder and harder as you move up with more and more responsibility. And we need all the advice that we can get, because how do you navigate these seasons? We didn't, you know, I feel like in my parents' generation, they didn't necessarily have communication experts like you to give them a pathway towards success. So that's so, so valuable. What kind of feedback have you received from, I'm a millennial, even the millennial generation, on you developed this pipeline, this training for people in the workplace? What kind of feedback have you received on how it's been helpful for them? What are the most helpful tips that they've used?
I have to say, it's been humbling how fabulous the results have been, because if you think about it logically, not only were your parents, my parents, not taught, my children haven't been taught communication, they don't teach it in schools.
Yeah.
And most homes don't teach communication skills. We just don't. And so what I'm doing is teaching foundational skills for how to initiate a conversation, how to deal with challenges, how to diffuse a conflict. If I'm having a conversation with you and it's not going well, what the heck do I do? Or so often we're afraid to start a conversation because we don't know how to start, or we don't know what to do if it doesn't go well, or we don't want to hurt someone's feelings, or they might get angry at us. So there are so many areas where we don't take care of ourselves and express ourselves. And so what's happened is people are showing up differently now in the organizations that have joined in and taken the communication protocol. It's really designed for fast-paced organizations. They're realizing that,
like the military, we should all be taking your course.
We should be. You know, everyone says to me, well, what's your vertical market? I'm like, every market needs to learn how to communicate better, because look at all the retention problems that are happening now. Engagement is low. Leadership really needs to connect and connect with challenging situations and bring in concerns from the outside world and be able to address things in a way where people feel like they matter. And what we do is we teach self-awareness skills, we teach communication skills and coping skills, which are exactly what I taught in my private practice.
Wow.
As a mental health practitioner, so, and as a consultant with companies. So ultimately, you're satisfying the mental health needs of the organization as well, because now I can cope when I'm stressed or when I'm overwhelmed or when I need to get grounded. And we all need those basic universal skills in order to show up as our best self. So that's the kind of feedback I'm getting, that's what companies want.
It's incredible.
You know, they don't want the tech things that can change overnight. These are permanent skills and they take them anywhere. So I can get excited when I talk about it.
I know. And I absolutely love it. And I literally just jotted down 10 bullet points while you were talking. Because even though selfishly I want to continue this podcast as an interview or a therapy session for me and how it'll apply to Kelly Sobrocki's own life, I want to make sure that listeners can apply this to their lives as well.
Yes.
And then their careers and those professional environments. So to start, I mean, you mentioned just starting a conversation, you know, starting a conversation in the workplace, diving into that a little bit more. Do you mean starting a conversation with something that's uncomfortable, or starting a conversation in general with new coworkers, or starting a conversation about an idea that you might have, but you're afraid to speak up on? Get into a little bit more of what you mean by that.
Sure. All of the above.
All of it.
All of it. In the workplace, what we want to do is state our intentions up front. You know, if I'm having a casual conversation, I don't necessarily need to do that. But everything you just said, if I want to talk to you about something that's a difficult or sensitive topic, I'll say, I'd like to have a conversation about X. Can we meet for about 45 minutes? Or we start the conversation and I say, one of the things I'd like to talk about today is my struggle in getting along with members of the team. And I think we have about 30 minutes, and I'd like to hear what you have to say. It could be, I want to talk to you about something it's difficult for me to talk about. Would you mind if I went first, explained everything that's on my mind, and then I'm happy to listen to what you have to say? So The point is you can say the structure of the conversation that you want to have, or you can say the topic, the purpose of the conversation, because it eases the person's mind. You're easing them into it and you're giving them a framework for the conversation, for the interaction.
I completely understand what you're saying. Specificity is so powerful in the workplace. Because whenever, you know, I used to work in a front office, basically, essentially working as like an assistant to a CEO, but it was called a flag aide for an admiral. And anytime I sent a cryptic email to a staff member, hey, Admiral X would like to meet you at 3 p.m. Oh my, fires. And what's it about? What did I do wrong? Is it about this? Is it about that? Oh my goodness. And I have like five people coming into my office and I'm like, and so it was just never great. It was never great. Versus, hey, Admiral X would like to speak with you about X, Y, and Z. Can you swing by at 3 p.m.? Now they can come with their tools and the data and prepare. And I didn't have to answer 45 questions, which was always terrific. So that's such an easy thing. Like people might be thinking like, oh, duh. But even in, like you said, more casual conversations, being intentional with a supervisor or a peer about some of those topics, it's great. It's going to streamline the process.
Totally. And exactly what you said, that's a perfect example that when you say to me, can we talk later? And you're my boss.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is, oh, what did
I'm getting
I do
fired.
Wrong? I'm getting fired. What did I do wrong? But if you say, can I talk to you later about the next project? Okay. And then I can go in prepared because I want the other person to be prepared if there is anything that they need to think about or prepare before they come in.
Okay, that's great. Specificity, got it. And then let's talk about diffusing conflict. Say that you do have conflict that you need to discuss with someone. Maybe you've been specific. Maybe say, hey, can I talk to you more about blank, whatever that conflict is. How do we even start that conversation? I'm a confrontational person, but even me, I hate having these conversations as I'm like, oh God, I hope this is received well. Like, I don't know if it's going to be.
I think you can say, this is a hard conversation, but I know we need to have it. And please give me the benefit of the doubt that I'd like us both to feel like we've been heard and that we can come to a productive outcome or a positive outcome. Again, stating your intentions, it doesn't mean it's going to go in that direction, but you start out by letting them know that we are having a conversation. It's not just me. It's not just you. And we're going to, hopefully, together we can try to navigate this. If during the conversation, which I think is going to be your next question, it starts to not go well, here's what you do. You stop talking because remember, I'm present, so I'm paying attention about how I want to show up. So I notice Kelly and I are talking and you're not all of a sudden your face changed, or I could just tell that the energy between us changed. As soon as I notice, I don't wait till it's a fever pitch. I stop talking and I comment on what I observe. I say, tell me what's going on. And I ask you, are you unhappy about something I just said? Or was there a misfire here? What are you thinking? So I'm checking in with you, but I do that. I'm very present that I don't know what you're going to say back to me. So I need to be prepared that you may say, I don't like what you're saying. I disagree with you. I think that was really aggressive. You may say something totally unexpected. I cannot get defensive. I have to listen to what you're saying and pause and take it in. The best solution to that is if you said to me, I don't like the way you're talking to me, right? If we disagree on something, then it's okay, why do you disagree? Let me tell you my point of view and we can navigate it together. But if you don't like the way I'm talking to you, then my job is to own my part. That wasn't my intention. And as a leader going into your new position, it's good to know that. If someone says, I feel like you're being, you know, flip with me, say, that's not my intention. I simply want to make a point to you. So you connect with what they're saying, you own your part, you take ownership and accountability for whatever they're presenting to you. And then you say, can we move on? And that's the difference in the workplace versus a personal relationship. In a personal relationship, I'm apologizing because I care about you and you matter to me and all that good stuff. In the workplace, it's more, I mean, it can be that, but it's more, I'm taking ownership and accountability because my job matters to me and this interaction matters. And I want you to know that I get it, and then we can move on. So that's the superficiality piece where it is a little less involved. Now, it doesn't mean right away you say, okay, cool, but at least we have a framework to navigate it and diffuse it before it escalates.
Deborah, do you feel like you get different feedback from female versus male professionals on this topic? Because I'm reflecting back to some of the more difficult conversations I've had, and I try to be really direct and understanding. Maybe I start receiving that attitude. Maybe people are pushing back. In various situations, I can't help but feel like if I was a male officer giving this counseling or having this discussion, it would be received differently than me being a 5'2", 100-pound female with a full face of makeup on, trying to have a direct conversation with someone and then pushing back or giving the attitude. And I don't know if you've seen in your professional experience, you know, as an expert, like, is this navigated differently between male and female sometimes?
The interesting thing is, I think some professions are more misogynistic, or some professions, it appears more. I did a talk in the life science field, and women scientists were remarkably not utilized, but they really were not able to speak up without feeling like, many of them, that they were in a lower position, and they weren't able to express themselves comfortably and feel like they were an equal party in the conversation. And I've heard it in other professions too. It depends on leadership. A lot of it is leadership, but I think that it does happen, unfortunately, hopefully less than it has in the past, but there are definitely areas where women are treated differently and there's a little bit of a less respect factor sometimes, which is really what you're saying. And I think depending on who the person is that you're talking to, you might need to call them out on it, or as you said, play the game and just keep talking. I would trust that you're aware it's happening in that moment. And in that moment, your mind needs to say, which direction am I going in? I can choose to say, the way you're speaking to me is not acceptable. From that, that's one end of it. And again, I'm not sure who's on the other end of the interaction. Another thing is, I feel like you're not hearing me. I don't know if I'd say I feel. I think you're not hearing me. And I want to be clear that this is important. And this came from so-and-so and myself. And you can hold up a mirror and tell them what your experience is of them. It doesn't seem like you're taking what I'm saying seriously. Am I not communicating it effectively? Like, lean in a little bit and show a little strength if you feel that that will make a difference, if that will feel good for you. Most importantly, how will it feel for you? Is that what you want to do?
I wholeheartedly agree. I'm definitely always the most proud of myself when I lean into the conversation more, because I think the expectation is that I'm going to cower down. And then I circle back. I can feel myself get frustrated in those situations, but I try to be really cautious of my mannerism, my face, like, okay, like, don't shut down. Don't show that you're frustrated. Like, still be able to receive what they're saying. I don't want to turn this into something confrontational, but mostly I try to just like summarize, okay, these are the points that I'm making. So hopefully there's not a miscommunication here. But it definitely, like, I mean, I'll be honest, Deborah, I know we had a sidebar last time we spoke about the military being different from some other workplaces. And even me being as outspoken and direct as I am, I still get frustrated to this day when I try to communicate effectively and it's on the opposite end, it's still being misconstrued. I'm like, okay, is that a me problem or is that a you problem? I don't know.
But is it misconstrued, or are they choosing to view you a certain way and not giving you the benefit of the doubt that you are capable and showing up in the role that you're supposed to be in?
And you mentioned this previously on the podcast I had you on 2 seasons ago now, or maybe it was last season. Oh my goodness, how long ago was that? But you said benefit of the doubt is one of the most powerful things that you can do. And you've mentioned it several times here. Why is giving others the benefit of the doubt, or asking them to give you the benefit of the doubt, so important in your communication?
So first of all, I have a download on my website about trust. And in that download, a free download, it's all about the benefit of the doubt. That's how important it is. Giving the benefit of the doubt, asking for the benefit of the doubt, and a benefit of the doubt challenge. Because when we approach even a challenging person with the mindset, I don't even have to say anything to you, but I'm thinking in terms of benefit of the doubt, I'm more open.
Okay.
I'm more able to communicate with you in a way where I'm going to come across more confident, and I'm coming across that I'm interested in hearing what you have to say. Versus if I know you're going to be challenging to me because you've been challenging to other people, and I approach you in a defensive way or in a way that it's all about you, buddy, and not about me, then you're closed off and okay. We're having a very different interaction. So it's very important, even if the person may not accept you or may be a difficult person, for your own well-being, the best thing to do is to approach a situation by thinking to yourself and or saying it way through your words or your actions, giving them the benefit of the doubt that they are trying their best, that they want a good outcome, that they want to get along with you, whatever it is. And that's very important. And then in a situation when you walk away, it's, can I give them the benefit of the doubt that they were also trying to express themselves in the best way that they could. And maybe they deserve it and maybe they don't. But those are all decisions that you make. And it forces you to take a step back and look at an interaction, look at how you come across. And that is how trust is built. That's how connections are made. And a lot of times, if someone's challenging, we approach them in a way where we're already guarded. Or someone we're not sure we like, we're already guarded. We already have an impression of them. It's one of the worst things you can do because you're already tuned out. You're not really listening. So now you've created another barrier to success. Can I say one more thing? It also makes you more relaxed.
Yes. Yes. And that's pretty much what I was about to touch on.
Okay.
I swear I had a point. Have you ever seen the movie Hitch with Will Smith?
I have. Yes.
You remember how he like starts with the opening line, nobody wakes up thinking, I hope I don't get swept off my feet today. And I think about that in the workplace where that benefit of the doubt note, I don't think anyone shows up to work and says, I hope I'm really bad at my job today.
Yes.
And so when I have difficult situations with subordinates or peers, that's one of the things I reflect on. I'm like, I don't think anyone is like, man, I really hope I'm bad at my job, you know? And so in this conversation that I'm about to have with that person, you know, whether it be conflict or controversial, whatever it is, I try to remember that and be like, okay, this is really to benefit the organization. Hopefully it's to also benefit them. They might be thinking that what they're doing is effective or it's being received well. It's not. It's not really effective. It's not really being received well. In order to benefit the organization, we need to make some changes. So that's kind of what I go into those conversations thinking. And I think most of the time, 98% of the time, they really are trying to do a good job. They really are.
That's right. So you hit on such a good point. For the sake of the organization, for the sake of my job, for the sake of my family, for the sake of the team or the department, I'm going to show up in my best form, in my best self. And I'm going to make a big assumption here that they are trying to do the same thing. And for the sake of the bigger picture, whatever it is, you know, for the sake of my marriage, I'm going to be nice to my mother-in-law. For the sake of whatever it is, for the sake of my children, I'm going to be nice to my ex-spouse. And people shrill. They don't like when I say that, but it's true. For the sake of what's important to us, for the sake of my paycheck, I'm going to be committed to my job. That's how we resolve conflicts. And that's how we show up differently. And that's why for that person who works for you, let's assume for the sake of their job, they're showing up in the best way possible, but we need to tweak the situation a little bit and thank them for showing up, thank them for their service. However, I just need to make some pointers and then we'll be good to go.
I've received this question from followers, and it was the same time that we started communicating about recording again. And I have to ask, it's a two-part question. How do you deal with coworkers who are extremely negative? And then how do you deal with a toxic work environment? How do you approach that as an individual?
There are a lot of variables in there. So I want to ask a few context questions, but I won't. I'll just go general. I worked in an environment a nonprofit organization years ago, and I remember starting there, and there was such a negative environment. I made a choice to not engage in it because I knew I couldn't because it would take me out. It's exhausting to be in a toxic environment. And I had a coworker who was spreading the gossip, and anytime she opened her mouth, it was something negative about someone else. And finally, and I liked her, but I said, I get that that's important to you, but I'm really trying to do a good job here. And for whatever reason, the stuff that you're saying isn't, whether I agree with it or not, I don't want to talk about that now. That's not helpful. And I think for me, that was a good way to handle it. But depending on if that person is always in your face, so to speak, about or in your space, being negative, if it's affecting you, you have to be able to either remove yourself emotionally from the situation, tuning it out, or more than likely say something to them. And it's not an easy conversation, but again, giving them the benefit of the doubt. You know, I want to talk to you about, and stating your intentions, want to talk to you about something that's going on. I don't know if you realize, you know, you may not even realize, but you seem like you're having a really hard time. Like you're really negative about what's happening on the team. And that's got to be really hard for you because it's hard for me to hear it.
It's hard for me to hear it. So it must be really hard for you to live
it. That's really good, right?
You know? Yeah. No, that's terrific. And I think a lot of people can use that to attack it head on. I will also say, I had a question personally. Someone asked me this about kind of my life in the Navy. I'm curious what you have to say about it. How do I handle peers, either in the workplace or in my organization in general, who are very candid about disapproving of my platform, my passions, my social media presence, what I stand for, who I am? What is the best way to navigate that, both they're in person in my work environment or when they approach me in, you know, other aspects of my life, be it online or in person?
So they're not doing this privately. They're doing this in your face, saying things to you?
Correct. Yeah. I've had all kinds of people.
And that was actually why I reached out to you originally.
Thank you. I know that. And that's why I wanted to ask you. It's been interesting figuring out how. So let me start with, this is how I currently deal with it. And I think I can improve. And I want to set the right example for others as well. So for example, people in my workplace that disapprove of what I do, I counter that by killing it in my everyday job. Because they can't really say much about what I do outside of work when I'm doing well inside of work. So I don't listen to it. And I let that kind of work ethic speak for itself. And typically those people who misunderstand or judge, they learn very quickly. We talked about that 120 days, right? If they come to work with me, they'll learn very fast. The Kelly that shows up to work is a Kelly that works. And so they can't really say much about what I'm doing outside of work. If anything, they're impressed. So they start asking, how are you doing everything that you're doing? Because holy cow, you're not messing around at work. You're focused. So that's one way. The second way, and you're probably going to laugh when I say this, I have come up with an elevator speech, if you will, because I visualized, okay, I have this person come up to me, say it's a male naval lieutenant or sometimes a senior officer, and says, so what's up with the social media? What's up with their Instagram page? What's up with this Miss USA thing that you did? I have literally practiced this elevator speech of, well, you know, I started in a social media platform about 5 years ago when I started doing pageants and saw that there was a huge deficit of women in the military who were proudly feminine, bold, and authentic to themselves. And I started speaking out about my journey and ended up creating this community of people who reached out because they didn't feel comfortable being themselves in a work environment. And if I can be that mentor to others online, then I think that's an incredible use of a resource. And then they're typically like, huh? Like, you know, they're just blown away because they just saw it as something that was self-interested instead of something that was outward facing as a tool to mentor and inspire other people. So that little elevator speech with my work ethic is kind of how I've countered both of those things, but I still fight negativity daily from peers online and in person in the workplace. And I know that I'm not the only one. So what's your advice?
Well, first of all, bravo to you, because I couldn't have given you better advice on that piece.
Thanks,
to be
Deborah.
Able to, you are doing what you're doing because you are on a self-imposed mission to not just be a so-called influencer, but make a difference and to model something for people. And I commend that. And you don't want that to get lost. So it's a beautiful thing when someone is critical of you or judgmental of you, and you can come back with a smile on your face and say, well, let me be really clear. I mean, people would say to me things about, oh, communication. Oh, no, like now we're going to have to learn how to talk more, or there are all these, you know, misconceptions.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Or soft skills. Great. Well, the soft skills are going to get you more efficiency, more engagement, more X, Y, and Z to increase your profits. So let's talk about soft skills. So similarly, that is my comeback, where I'm speaking to the solution that I have versus addressing the judgment, particularly if it's someone that I'm not in a position to address the judgment, which you're saying, particularly if it's a superior to you, you're not going to say, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the part about how do you handle the negativity that comes towards you, I think you have to be thick-skinned to do what you're doing, unfortunately. People are going to say things because they can do it anonymously. They can, most of them, they can do it, as you've said, and you've written about this, that they can do it in secret. No one knows, you know, no one's knocking on their door and saying, tell me, let's have the conversation. We don't know who they are, and they're not brave. And so part of it is they're saying something because they can, and you need to be able to say to yourself, I'm staying in my lane. I'm doing what feels right for me. And this is what I will continue to do. And until they're in your face and you really have to deal with them, should that happen, for the most part, I would mentally kick them to the curb.
I love that. And I think that it's so applicable to anyone. You don't have to be building a brand or a business or a social media platform or a podcast. You don't need to be doing any of that. You can just solely be showing up at work, but leading authentically, and people won't like it. They may not like you. They may not like your style. They may not like who you are. They may not like the way you talk. They may not like the way you work. But being grounded in who you are and understanding your personal mission and leading authentically is going to get you so much further. And sometimes you have to put those blinders on. And like I said, I think your work ethic will stand the test of time. But being thick-skinned helps a lot. It's hard to do, though.
Oh, it's so hard. And, you know, what you said before is that their behavior almost motivated you to show up for those 120 days and more, because you know you're good at what you do. I think the key is when we know there's a purity to our work or to who we are or to what we're trying to get across, live in that purity and stay true to yourself and understand that the people that are doing that, they're small, and their need to do that comes from somewhere that's not necessarily a nice place or an open place. And if you can show up and continue to show up, maybe they'll be able to turn the corner, as you've said, has happened for you, and maybe they won't. But either way, you staying true to yourself is really the key, because when someone is, as I call it, turned away, sometimes they're partially turned away and they're just sort of listening, but they're being, you know, not so nice. And sometimes people are really turned away and they're invested in their negativity. And when they are, you can't change someone who's invested in their negativity. That's not your job. Your job is to take care of yourself and show up in the best way possible for you and continue to do what you're doing and not allow that in. And we all have to do that at different points. And quite frankly, I don't know if we've spoken about this before, and I won't give you the whole thing, but when I first started, when I wrote my book, I didn't want to put my name on it.
Really? No, we haven't spoken about it.
That was the first thing I did. I wrote a book. Here I was doing consulting. I'm a social worker. I had a big private practice working with primarily relationships and business relationships and all sorts of interactions that were struggling. It was all about conflict. And with big companies and teams, and I realized after doing it for a very long time, a couple of decades, that what I was doing was different. That's how it started. So
yeah,
I'm making this really short. So I started writing. I'd never written it down. So I started writing it down. A friend of mine said, oh, you wrote a book. I said, no, it'll be in an article. I wasn't on social media at the time because the way that I worked, I liked my privacy. I was not interested in, to me, social media was, what did you eat for lunch? That kind of thing. Yeah. I didn't really see it as something that interested me very much. And also, I didn't like the exposure. I didn't want to be exposed. It felt threatening. And when I wrote the book, they said, you have to put your name on it. You have to put your picture on it, the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, no, that's not happening.
No, please don't.
I delayed everything for between 6 months and a year because I was so, and thin-skinned. My biggest thing was, once I do this, what if people don't like it? What if people come at me? What if they criticize me? And I didn't want that at all. And honestly, that for the most part hasn't happened because I'm not talking about things that are particularly controversial. But I realized that my mission, the communication tools and everything that I do, they kind of can't go out fully without me. So I need to be present in the program. I need to be present here talking with you about the relationship protocol or about the communication protocol program, because I can't just put something out. I can't put a book out without a name. And by the way, the picture that I struggled with so much is a black and white shot, and it's about an inch big on the back.
Just enough, though, to make to push you out of your comfort zone.
Oh, my God. I'm a different person now than I was then, which is really, I have pushed through every fear, almost every fear. But, you know, something comes in my path and I stop and I say, what's the fear about? And what can I do in a way that does feel comfortable to push that barrier a little bit further? And that's what I've done. The box started out pretty small and now it's pretty big.
Now it's pretty big and now you're doing incredible things. And I just feel so honored that you took the time to reach out, that you allowed me to have you on here for a second time to dive in more into these practices and these fundamentals. I mean, people like you are instilling a sense of confidence in me to keep going.
I hope so.
It's scary. It's so scary to pursue that mission. And like you said, to be that face. I didn't start out being like, you know, I really want to be the face of the Navy and like have a social media platform and speak about all these things that I care about. I was just doing my thing. I just was doing my thing. And then like we talked about before the podcast, you realize doing your thing is actually very different. It's actually very different than the person to your left and the person to your right. You think differently and you're acting differently. And that's why these messages have fallen into our laps and why we need to speak about them. And so thank you for speaking to me and giving me this advice. Everyone got to tune in to my mentoring / therapeutic session with you before I go take on this next command. So it was kind of a fun little journey because I get to look back on this even 2 years from now and be like, oh my God, I was so scared. And look, it's going swimmingly. Hopefully.
It's swimming.
Yeah. It's going great. So Deborah, on a final note, what would your final piece of advice be to the person showing up with their blazer on and briefcase in hand, going into the workplace tomorrow, who really wants to change the way they communicate to others?
I would say walk tall. Throw your shoulders back. Take a nice deep breath. Breathe in what you need. If you need to calm down, if you need confidence, breathe it in and exhale the stress. Get rid of the stress and the discomfort, and then walk in that door with a smile on your face or turn on the computer with a smile on your face. But show up in a way where your body reminds you that you are strong and capable and you are all you need to do a great job.
I love that. Thank you so much, Deborah. Where can we find you? Where can we find everything that you, all this information that you gave us, where we can listen to it and where can we read it?
So therelationshipprotocol.com is my website. And on there, I do have that free download. I actually have two. One is called Tell Me What to Say, How to Start Conversations. And the other is about trust, building trust in the workplace. So they're both helpful. and I have my online courses there. The communication protocol, if anyone works at an organization that could benefit from communication help, we are here for you. And it's a wonderful program. We're having great results, and companies are really benefiting from getting these foundational permanent skills. So that's something I'm really proud of. And on LinkedIn, Debra, D-E-B-R-A Roberts, and on Instagram, a little less, but trying, The Relationship Protocol on Instagram.
Awesome. So everyone reach out to Debra with your questions, or bosses reach out to her to bring her in to potentially talk with your employees. But thank you so, so much. This is exactly what I needed. And I'm so proud to have you in my corner and cheering me on. I feel so honored. So thanks, Debra.
Thank you. I am in your corner. I'm so glad to be there.
Thank you. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Misunderstood Podcast. I love hearing from you guys, and I want you to take a screenshot of this episode, tag at misunderstood.podcast on Instagram, and share a takeaway from today's episode. Something you loved, something you wanted more of, whatever it is, it helps me learn what you guys want to hear. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes or Spotify. I want to give a special shout out to my friends at Hatch for producing this episode. If you're looking to launch a podcast, or if you already have one, you can get unlimited podcast editing by visiting usehatch.fm. That's usehatch.fm. Thanks so much, guys. Until next week, this is your Misunderstood, Kelly Hall. The views and opinions presented here in this episode are those of myself and do not necessarily represent the views of the DoD or its components. Appearance of or reference to any commercial products or services does not constitute DoD endorsement in those products or services. The appearance of external hyperlinks does not constitute DoD endorsement of the linked websites or of the information, products, or services therein.